Part 15. Custer's Men, All Alone at the End. When you break it down, there are two very different stories of what happened at the Battle of the Little Bighorn. One of them, the accepted consensus view taught to virtually every American child for over a century, has Custer dying at the end on Last Stand Hill. Unfortunately, as discussed above, there is no eyewitness support for this theory at all. It therefore rests entirely on the circumstantial evidence of where Custer's corpse was found, which is meaningless under the circumstances. As the eyewitness accounts of 7th Cavalry surgeon Dr. H.R. Porter, Peter Thompson, Edward Pigford, and William O. Taylor vividly indicate, the Americans were terrified of falling into the hands of the savages, realistically fearing they would be tortured in life and mutilated in death. 7th Cavalry troopers were willing to risk their lives to prevent dead and dying comrades from falling into Indian hands, as the case of Private James J. Tanner on the night of June 25th illustrates. There is no doubt that Custer's retreating men would have carried their fallen leader with them, dead or alive, especially since four of Custer's family were with him when he fell, his brothers Thomas Custer and Boston Custer, his nephew Henry Armstrong Reed, and his brother-in-law Thomas Calhoun. You can gauge the strength of the American impulse to carry Custer's body from the fact that William O. Taylor thought they should have continued to carry it back to Fort Lincoln. There was plenty of salt, he said. Fact is, the accepted consensus view of the Battle of the Little Bighorn is simply unable to explain many important aspects of the battle, such as why Custer abandoned his attack at Medicine Tail Coulee in the middle of the river, why Custer didn't directly reinforce Reno, how and when Custer was killed, why Custer's men fired two apparent signal volleys at the very beginning of the Custer fight before they were under heavy pressure from the Indians, what happened to Curley, etc. In short, the accepted consensus view of the Battle of the Little Bighorn is riddled with Ptolemaic problems and simply does not square with the facts of the battle from the eyewitness record. The eyewitness record says Custer was killed at the beginning of the Custer fight when Custer did what he told his men he intended to do, which is to say, charge across the ford at Medicine Tail Coulee and attack the huge village on the other side of the Little Bighorn. Nor are the problems with the accepted consensus view of the Battle of the Little Bighorn restricted to Custer. The story the Americans teach their children also makes a shameful hash of the 7th Cavalry's Indian Scout story. See the twisted saga of the 7th Cavalry's Unsung Scouts for more info. Then there's the other explanation for the Battle of the Little Bighorn, the eyewitness explanation. White Cowbull's account of shooting an officer on a sorrel horse with four white stockings, who can only be Custer, at the beginning of the battle is supported in its various parts by nearly two dozen other eyewitness accounts from Sioux, Cheyenne, Arapaho, Crow, and American survivors of the battle. It also makes sense and simultaneously resolves most of the persistent problems with the accepted consensus view cited above. So it turns out that the eyewitness record of the Battle of the Little Bighorn reveals that the cherished American picture of Custer standing heroically erect in buckskin at the end is a lie, as Pretty Shield put it. The sort of big, heroic, self-serving lie that Americans love to tell themselves. Then, during America's illegal, immoral, atrocity-laced invasion of the Great Sioux Nation, and now, during America's illegal, immoral, atrocity-laced invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq.